Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. In just a minute, I'm going to take you back through our 2024 on the Line. I've put together a little sampler of clips from last year, just to review everyone we talked to and give people who may not have listened before a good place to start. So I'll get to that in just a minute, but first, I spoke with Gazette General Manager and Editor James Bright about a new initiative we're starting this year, the Gazette's 150th anniversary year. So here's my conversation with James. James Bright is here with some interesting and exciting news about the Gazette's 150th anniversary year, 2025. What is that, James?
Hey, Carl. Yes. So thanks so much for having me on. The Community News Project is an initiative that we're starting today where we are seeking philanthropic donations for the Texarkana Gazette to sustain publication of local news and reporting local news in Texarkana for the next 150 years. This year is our 150th anniversary for the Texarkana Gazette. We've been publishing continuously since 1875. But one thing people don't know is we have not turned a profit since 2018. We've continued to adjust our business model and look at different ways of securing revenue and being more efficient in our expenses. But our company, Waco Media, which is the parent company of Texarkana Gazette, is dedicated to funding a huge newsroom in comparison to papers our size, which means we run higher expenses. And our goal is to create a product and a paper that accurately reflects the community which we serve. We're at a point that we need to find new ways to sustain our business.
So what are people going to be seeing this year, and how can they help out?
Yeah. So there's two things we're doing this year to really celebrate the 150th anniversary of the Gazette. One is basically honoring all the stories, the reporters, the content that's come before. We'll be printing a monthly, I like to call them wrappers, but effectively what they are, four-page sections at minimum, that will go around a Sunday edition of the Texarkana Gazette each month, and we'll print articles, old articles from the last 150 years. For instance, in this January's edition, we'll have articles from 1884 all the way up to 2000 and everything in between. So that's one thing folks can look for. We'll have some interactive information online. We'll have a monthly podcast where we look at all these stories that we're reprinting and the importance they had on the community. And then there's the Community Foundation aspect of it and the Community Journalism Project. And readers that feel so inclined to sustain our business, to help us, can donate by logging on to a website that will have attached a story with this podcast, or by dropping by the Texarkana Gazette and writing a check or giving us some money to hand over to the Arkansas Community Foundation chapter in Texarkana. And it's important to note that the Arkansas Community Foundation is the ones that are managing all this money, and all this money is going to go back to the newsroom. The goal is to fund continued stories and continued production of news. It's not going to go anywhere else. It's not going to go into executive payroll or to operations of the business. So say, the building, to keep the building and the lights on. It's going strictly to paychecks or expenses associated with reporters.
And people will be able to see who has given money. Correct.
If they'd like, yes. So anyone who donates over $150 will be thanked in ads every single month if they'd like to be. If they'd like to be anonymous, that, of course, is fine, too. But anything over $150, we will thank publicly. We'll also have an event in November of this year celebrating 150 years of the Gazette. And anyone who donates $150 over for the first 150 donations will be invited free of charge to come to this event and celebrate with us. So the first 150.
So, excellent. It's just another way that you can support local journalism right here in Texarkana.
And that's our goal, really. I mean, a lot of communities take newspapers for granted, and it's easy to do that. But the reality is that there are now 55 million Americans who don't have access to local news. And the situation we have today is one where the way that newspapers make money and accrue revenue has changed drastically in the last 20 years, and some have weathered that storm better than others. But we have to seek new ideas and new initiatives on sustaining our business model. And this is just another way that we can sustain local journalism and keep local journalism alive in Texarkana.
For or hopefully another 150 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I probably won't be around to see that, but I certainly hope that my successor, several lines down the road, will be able to have some help from these gifts that hopefully will continue for years to come.
All right, great. I'll put links to everything in the show notes.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Sure. . 2024 was an amazing year in lots of ways, including all the great people I got to talk to on the line. I learn a lot from the show, and it's always great to be able to ask such interesting people questions. I hope you enjoy listening. We're going to start off in January when Gazette reporter Shardae James joined me to talk with UAHT instructor Hollis Thompson, who was working on staging a live audio drama to raise funds for a nonprofit that gives comic books to children in hospitals.
I have been reading comics since I was like 5 years old. It is a lifelong art form that I've been engaging with. And so I just pitched to them, hey, what if we did a audio drama that was like the live radio shows they used to do back in the 30s and 40s, where they weren't pre-recorded. They had people in the radio studio,
right,
live, and all those sound effects, that's right, had to be a Foley artist live there with them. And I said, we could do something like that with everyone being on their cameras separately.
I read that the story is based about on one of the first Batman stories in 1939, was it?
Yep, that's correct. Actually, the first Batman story.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the case of the Chemical Syndicate, which was the very, very first Batman story ever. Bob Kane, the artist, and Bill Finger, the scripter, the two people who created Batman, that was their first attempt. It is actually kind of funny because most of the plot is actually ripped off from another story, which was a pulp fiction story about the Shadow, which was kind of one of the proto superheroes from the pulp magazines.
I spoke with former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson after he had dropped out of the race for the Republican presidential nomination. After some questions about then candidate Donald Trump, I changed the subject. I feel sort of obliged to have had to ask you about him. What would you rather talk about? What is it that we're not talking about because of him, as they say, sucking all the oxygen out of the room?
You know, that's a good question. And I tried to present a campaign that were full of ideas. And we've got to address the deficit that we have in the country. Our excessive federal spending. We've got to make sure that we can grow our economy, get a better handle on the distrust of the economy, the lack of confidence in our economy. And of course, the borders is something that has to be talked about. But, you know, whenever people are working for solutions and they're derailed by Donald Trump, his name does come into play. And so he forces himself into the debate with some really bad ideas. But there's a lot of good ideas out there. What I focused on was a very precise reform of federal law enforcement, making sure that we have a commission for the future of Social Security and Medicare to make sure they're solvent for the future. But we have to have a bipartisan approach to that. We want to talk about controlling our deficit. And the last time we balanced the budget in this country, when I was in the United States Congress, you know, the issues that we need to be talking about are our housing shortage in America. We need to be talking about the kitchen table issues that concern families and certainly security with the crime that's in the street. And that's why I was a rule of law candidate. So those are the issues that we need to focus on.
Science educator Janet Ivy Dunsing came on the show to talk about getting people excited about April's total solar eclipse.
Did you get to see it in 2017 by chance?
We had the partial here, which was interesting, but I gather the total eclipse is completely different.
I heard a funny astrophysicist say a partial solar eclipse, the difference between a partial solar eclipse and a total solar eclipse is like a okay kiss and a really good kiss.
So, yeah, someone so else
get to that little path of totality for the really good experience. And yes, everything.
Someone else said it's like the difference between looking at a picture of a waterfall and standing by a waterfall.
So true, because it was even after the whole event, I went to get my hair cut and I'm walking in and Sandy goes, you know, Janet, I was thinking that you were just like, oh, my gosh, I got tired of looking at you. It's like every night on the TV, you were telling us something about why we got to look up. And she goes, and then I finally had that experience. And people really talk about it as really kind of something holy and indescribable and kind of a spiritual experience. Yeah. And so and I think what I love about it truly is just that hopefully for a moment, a ton, millions of people are all looking up, having a shared experience. And for one moment in time, we realize that we're a lot more unified than different and, you know, completely separated by all these different things that we think we are.
Cryptid expert Lyle Blackburn joined me before last year's Falk Monster Festival. I asked what evidence for Sasquatch he found most compelling.
Well, you know, over the years, I've seen a number of tracks that the circumstances surrounding that seem to be credible, and the tracks themselves appear to be from something that was a biological creature or some physical creature and not, you know, a stamp or something that somebody's trying to hoax. And certainly, you know, those kind of things pop up, but you can usually tell the difference. And, you know, there's been some hair samples that have been taken and have the analysis of that has come back as unknown. Mm-hmm. And when you rule out everything, and of course, you can't really definitively say this is from a Bigfoot because there is no type specimen of a hair where we know it's from a Bigfoot. So you're really just the best you can do is say, well, it's not any number of animals that would be indigenous to this area. Mm-hmm. It just sort of remains an open case. So, you know, those are the type of things. And occasionally I've seen a few videos and photos that withstand a little more scrutiny. A lot of the stuff on the internet, of course, is people trying to get views, or, you know, they don't have any integrity to the subject, so they don't care and then hoax it. But occasionally there are some promising looking photos and things like that. But, you know, that would be the best. And for me, I know anecdotal evidence and word of mouth sightings isn't, you know, probably wouldn't be admissible in court, but when you interview people in person, and I have done so as many times as I have over the years, especially in the Falk Monster case, you get a sense of the credibility. And in some of these sightings and folks that have seen it down there, you just absolutely cannot explain what they've seen. It wasn't a person in a suit. It wasn't another animal. It just simply is something they saw that we still don't have complete answers for.
Scott Dickers, humorist, author, and co-founder of satirical newspaper The Onion, gave a talk at A&M Texarkana in April. Gazette reporter Mallory Wyatt and I asked him about being funny during crazy times.
It seems like things are getting crazy, but they're really not. You're making fun of and talking about people, and people have always been insane. It's not a new thing that people do crazy, stupid, things that are fun to make fun of.
Right.
So, you know, The Onion is part of a long, proud tradition of humor publications in America and in other countries, going back to the ancient Greeks, where we lampoon, you know, public figures and institutions and try to speak in the voice of the common people. These are kind of well-worn tropes of the genre of comedy, especially like comedy that is tip topical in a periodical, like a magazine and so forth. The recent history, you know, people know the National Lampoon, they know Mad Magazine, they might remember Spy Magazine from the 80s, which was a great magazine. And so that's kind of where The Onion comes from.
Incoming Texarkana, Arkansas School District Superintendent Lloyd Jackson told Gazette reporter Mallory Wyatt about his plans and his background.
What led you to education as a path?
Great question. And I wish I had some great epiphany where you're just like, man, I want to be an educator. I spent a lot of my youth working with leaders. And even as a young person, I was a leader of leaders. And I found myself teaching Sunday school, found myself being workshop presenter at different conferences and things of that nature. And when I went off to college, I wanted to major in mathematics. But I really wanted to major in PE, physical education, with a minor in mathematics, so I can drive a bus. Being a first-generation college student, I didn't know what to expect, what to even do when I got to college. But I came back as a freshman, and I was sharing my excitement about being a physical education major and minoring in mathematics to my counselor, Ms. McIver, at that time. And Ms. McIver looked at me and she said, Lloyd, how about you major in mathematics? And you want to do the coaching thing, you can do that, but you're going to be very employable as a math teacher. And so I switched my major to mathematics. And from there, again, I found a love for teaching and learning, and got a bachelor's of science in mathematics, but also got my certification in education to teach math. And it's been a joy ever since to think about. You know, I could not imagine working in any other space, because impacting young people's lives has been very rewarding.
In 2024, we launched the On the Line Local History Series. Dr. Laura Sykes, history professor at A&M Texarkana, join me to tell the story of Texarkana right from the beginning. We started with a two-episode conversation about the indigenous Caddo people.
So as all of this is happening, the Spanish are like hanging out around here, and they're learning about the Caddo, even though they have these big language barriers. And they're describing some things that are interesting. They say that there are at least 20 ceremonial centers, each with from 1 to 11 mounds, distributed in a 40-mile-wide band along the general route that the Spaniards took from Arkadelphia, Arkansas, towards Texarkana to the Red River Valley. So the Spanish were probably always within 20 miles of an active temple mound, whether they knew it or not, and always surrounded by these farmsteads and compounds everywhere. They were in an urban environment, if you think about it. I mean, right. Relatively, you know,
right. Yeah.
They're not in the middle of nothing. The Caddo people are around them. They have a vibrant life. They have the economy that's going on. They have all of this stuff. There was an attempt to stop Moscoso and his army before they reached the Red River as they're moving towards New Spain. So as the troops of the Spanish are trying to move towards Mexico, they're going to go and hit the Red River. And at the Red River, leaders of three Caddo tribes have come together to bring some of their warriors to try to stop them from crossing over. And in particular, the Caddo didn't want these Spanish who had been, you know, basically taking a bunch of grain, or they didn't want the Spanish who had been coming through and
raiding,
yes, to get to some of their more fertile farm areas. So they're going to try and stop them from getting across the Red River. And the Spanish are going to basically be routed. they're going to claim to have killed a great number of Native Americans, but we're not sure because this is a Spanish account.
In June, we caught up with Texarkana, Arkansas Mayor Alan Brown.
You know, I've got quite a few things that the city's working on that I would like to see come to fruition. And it's been a little bit more difficult than what I want it to be. But, you know, when you have a city council and you have a mayor and you have a city manager form of government, you know, you're one opinion.
Right.
You can be the leader of the meetings and represent the city at functions such as this and everything else that we do. But, you know, you're actually one person. And there's sometimes in our situations, there's six other opinions.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get things accomplished that, you know, I felt like would be in the best interest of the city.
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to, you know, I've lost some what I thought were very important battles. A couple of those, I think over the years, my first couple of years, I might have got started off on the wrong foot, you know, really pressuring some things that really needed to be fixed. And people thought I was trying to change Rome in a day.
Right.
But, you know, I just drew off of my experience and the city wasn't really operating at that point in time, in my opinion, as the business it needed to be operating in.
Yeah.
Plus, we have zero economic development.
Yeah.
And that is what I ran on. And that's what I work on every day.
Matt Solomon, Texarkana, Texas Historic Preservation Officer, stopped by the studio to tell us about his job. What sort of things have you done so far this year?
So I'm really, really excited about some of the historic markers that we've rediscovered. I use that term because back in the 60s, there was a big effort to kind of to mark Texarkana's history. And when I first got to the city, I wasn't really sure where I fit in. You know, like in a new job, you try to figure out, okay, what's needed? Where do I go?
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with this position? You know, originally I was just a program manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to figure out where I fit in. And I really started digging into the history of Texarkana. I grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big part of who I am.
Dr. Jenny McCormick-Walker told me about her transition from leading the local literacy center to becoming executive director of statewide organization, Literacy Texas.
The work that I was able to do with my team here in Texarkana really served as a model for what they wanted to see kind of across the state. So I was very excited to be able to move into this position. It's definitely a level up in my career. But my goal is to really take some of the things that we did here and expand them across Texas and show those organizations how to really engage creative community collaboration, good problem-solving strategies, grant writing, all of the things that we were able to accomplish while I was in that position here. My goal is to help other organizations find that same success. And one of the great things about this job for me and about what this does for Texarkana is that I have moved our state headquarters from Dallas to Texarkana. And that's a pretty significant move for us, you know, to be able to do that. I was very grateful for our board of directors for allowing me to do that. And Literacy Texas is funded by a $1.5 million grant from the Texas Workforce Commission. And one thing that is really exciting about that for me is that I shop locally. So all of the spending that I'm doing, I'm trying to use our Texarkana folks and put that money into our local economy.
As football season neared, Gazette sports director Jason Hopkins and reporter Austin Literal gave us a sneak peek at The Audible, our annual high school football preview magazine. Okay, so Jason, you've been doing this. This is the sixth year, right?
Yeah, we started it 6 years ago. We used to do the broadsheet version, which means it was in newspaper. And when our current GM got here, the first thing I asked him was, hey, can we do a magazine? Mm-hmm. He said, no. And I said, why not? And he says, what's the value of a magazine versus, you know, the print product of a newspaper? So we sat down, we talked about it, and he found out that he could sell it, which was a pretty good selling point for him. There was a lot of interest in a magazine at the time. And then he asked me, can you do it in 40 pages? Mm-hmm. Again, I said no. or I said no that time. There was no way that we were going to fit 30-something schools on 40 pages.
Right.
So we talked about it some more, and he gave me 112 pages, I believe it was, and we knocked it out. And the rest is history. I mean, every year it's magazine form now. The pages go up, the schools go up. Every year we're adding one or two, it feels like, and to the point now where I think we're at 34, 35 high schools in this magazine.
For our second local history topic, Dr. Laura Sykes discussed the massive logjam called the Great Red River Raft.
In England, they're experiencing the First Industrial Revolution. We also have the effects of the First Industrial Revolution here in the United States, although the Second Industrial Revolution is going to be our big wheelhouse. The First Industrial Revolution, though, brings one invention that is going to be crucial to the development of the story.
I was about to say, the steam engine.
Right? That's right, the steam engine. So once the steam engine is developed, it's going to change everything. It's going to change our whole world, the way that we produce and consume things, the way we move across the land. But it's also going to change the way that we feel a sense of power over the land and control. This is a time when we're really going into nature, especially in the Deep South, and we are beginning to, for instance, along the Mississippi Delta, we're beginning to have machinery that can actually clear some of this land for the first time. And now with the steamboat, we have this need on these rivers to be able to go up and down them very quickly because these steamboats are making us move faster, right?
Right.
We can go faster, we can go further in a shorter period of time.
Jennifer Lacefield, executive director of Randy Sam's Outreach Shelter, came on the show to share the shelter's mission and needs.
So thanks to the our very giving community, we frequently get clothing donations in, depending on what we're low on at any given point or what the needs are, like with the cold weather coming up. They're not always enough of what we need, which is why I like to have opportunities like this with you to be able to ask for more donations. But we do have clothing donations from the community. So we provide clothing, also hygiene items from the community. So we provide those items not only to our clients, but to anyone off the street that stops by that's needing those items. They just fill out a pantry request and what they're needing, and then we're able to get those things for them. We also have a life skills classes. We have a full-time shelter case manager. Her job is 100% devoted to providing voluntary case management services to the Randy Sam's clients, as well as life skills classes. And a couple times a month, she provides life skills classes over a variety of topics at the shelter. And there is a weekly sign-in sheet that goes around for any of our clients to sign up if they want her assistance with setting goals, reaching goals. We also have some funding in part through community donations and in part through grants to be able to help pay for various costs that might arise during a client's stay, such as if they need mental health medication, prescription assistance, or physical health medication. She helps with setting them appointments. We help with giving them T-Line bus tickets. So if they need to go anywhere during their stay at Randy Sam's, they can. We also have a partnership with Mission Texarkana and the City of Texarkana, Texas, with the Doorways grant to provide case management to a smaller number of homeless that get housed into apartments and receive assistance through that grant toward utility and rent assistance, as well as ongoing case management. So we have a variety of services that sometimes people don't know that we offer that go beyond just providing emergency shelter.
And for the last new episode of 2024, I talked to Broadway star Norm Lewis about his career and his solo show at the Perot Theater.
So I was, you know, listening to a lot of shows from different Broadway cast albums, things like that. I was heavily into the Church back at that time. And I remember I got into a lot of contemporary Christian artists that were very dramatic. So there was a guy named Lionel Harris, who had this beautiful tenor voice. And also, you probably know Sandy Patty. And it was back in the day where you could buy cassette tapes that had the instrumental of the music that they sang. And then I would go and get a collection of, I had a lot of those. And then I would go and sing at different churches. And it was a lot of fun. Sometimes I would get a lot of funny looks because I was singing an interesting sort of style of music in an interesting sort of church. But yeah, I kind of attribute that to some of honing my skills.
As always, thanks for listening last year. And stay tuned. We've got a lot of great things planned for 2025. I'll see you next time on The Line.